Well, we have gathered here. I've got six other people with me, so that's seven of us and a quarter pounder. My grandson's here around someplace making noise. And so we want to just do these podcasts and continue this next week. I might be up here by myself talking to the chairs, so they will all be redeemed. So before I get started, any of you have anything you want to share, put on the podcast, anything profound? If you do, just make sure you use the mic here. I'm just leaving it on. So definitely interesting times that we're in, and I've been hearing one of the things that's sticking out to me. I've heard this from ministries, people in the ministry, but I've also heard it even from secular people. There was a comedian on Fox News that was being interviewed, but he's very serious, and he just talked about this. He said, it's like we've been forced off of the treadmill of life into a rest, and he was saying, I have to go home and learn how to play Jenko with my nine-year-old, and he's like, but this is good. It's causing us to stop all of our activity and do something that's unusual. I heard someone else in the ministry just saying, this is a Sabbath rest that the Lord's just forcing on us in that aspect of what's going on. And so it truly is that. It's going to be interesting to see as we watch things unfold what the outcome is. And I think everyone will agree this is probably going to change us. It's going to change how we think, just like 9/11 changed us, changed how we looked at things. It's going to change our perspective. And our friend Christopher Milo had texted me the other day and said, "Hey, how you doing, bud?" You know, and I said, "I'm good." For fear of forgetting what I said, I'll look it up here quick. And I said to him, texted back to him, it's a mandatory Sabbath rest for our culture. People will take gathering together, will not take gathering together for granted anymore. Faith will increase. Sleeping gifts in people will be awakened. It's a win-win. And he agreed with that. And it's like, it's going to affect us, and some of the things, a lot of the things that we've taken for granted, we're going to have a real appreciation for. And I just think, as once it's over, there will be loss of life, and there is tragedy in this. It is also going to, the Lord is going to use it for good and comfort us and give us a new perspective on life. So I was in Psalms 118, and I shared this with Phyllis the other morning. As we were sitting, we took communion together, and she shared a few things, and I said, you know, the other day when I was just sitting with my Bible and my notes, I said, I want to show you something that I found. And so I was in Psalms 118 several days ago, and I found this verse, Psalms 118, verse 20, and in the Passion Translation it says, I have found the gateway to God, the pathway to His presence for all His lovers. And I stopped at that. I was actually in Psalms 118 looking at verse 17, which is very popular. And it's this passage about you will live and not die. And it reads, you will not let them kill me, but I will live to tell the world what the Lord has done for me. And so that verse had just popped up. I heard Phyllis referring to it and different people referring to it. I was there just looking it up and looking at it, and my eyes dropped down to this verse 20, I have found the gateway to God. And I was just intrigued with it for a moment. It was highlighted, and I just thought to myself, what's it like if you're out searching and you find something? And all of a sudden, I just felt to reread the chapter and look for what he had found, that he comes to this point in verse 20 that says, and he just makes this statement that you could just read right past, I have found the gateway, I have found the way, I've found the opening to get into God and into His presence. And so I began to to start and just make these notations without thinking a lot about it, just seeing what action did he take? What did he actually, what did he do that brought him to this this statement and phrase of saying, I found the gateway? So I begin, and if you're looking at this chapter, and of course the different translations, there may be other things that stick out this to you. This isn't an inclusive, like on all everything, but it was they were just the things that popped out, like the obvious things. And right away in the first verse, it reads, keep on giving thanks to God, for he is so good. His constant, tender love lasts forever. And the phrase, like in the New King James, is his mercy endures forever. American Standard is loving kindness endures forever. And it's a phrase then that gets repeated. But the action is this, giving thanks. And it is this age-old thing that transforms your atmosphere when you just choose to give thanks. It breaks the complaining. It breaks a lot of things in our life. And it's something, if you don't guard over it, you stop doing. You stop giving thanks. You become aware of obstacles. You can become aware of things that are hard, things that are bothering you, and things you need, and that can consume you, and you forget to give thanks for what you have. Years ago, the Lord gave me this prevailing word. It still applies, to use what I have. It's so easy to be frustrated because you don't feel like you have enough. You don't have what it takes to get someplace. And the Lord, like I had this word, and I always go back to it. It always brings me peace. Use what you have. And we're standing here in this new building the Lord provided for us when it was hope against hope. We could not seem to move the frog off the lily pad, you know, as simple as that might be. We just could not get to this any momentum, and we were just stuck. And it was so frustrating, and yet we always had a place to meet, and we always had a people that gathered together. And the older I get, the less I take that for granted, to realize the Lord always provided a place for us. And when we were leaving one place, I would go out. I remember one night driving around with Chris Brothers, like, where are we going to move to? Where can we go? We've used up all the buildings that we know of. We've been here, been there. And all of a sudden, out of that, just crying out, I just remember us just talking and, like, didn't have an answer, didn't know where to go or what to do, but knew it was time to move on from where we were meeting. And within a day or two, this idea came, as a testimony. Someone had met in a tent for several years, and that testimony was all I needed. I knew if they could do it, we could do it. We used what we had, and the next thing we know, we had this in the neatest tent gathering place that we were there for 11 years, and it was just, it was amazing how the Lord met us in that place. The next thing that stuck out to me is in verse 2, and it says, his constant tender love, sing, and the action is sing. Sing, his constant tender love lasts forever, or his mercies endure forever. And something happens in us. I remember studying this. Somebody from IHOP, do you remember the name of the man that did that? It was way back. And I had some materials from him. I just can't remember the name right now. Kurt Bennett, maybe? Yeah, I think so. And one of his elements, if I remember right, was there's something that happens when you sing the scriptures. Read the word, sing the word, or sing a phrase. It opens up something inside of you. Again, when we get consumed with the worries of life, we stop singing. And I notice one thing that I've had to have a check in my heart about, or like what I do. I'll listen to music, but it's not the same as singing the music. And there's something that opens up, and with all of this perfect music we have access to, perfect worship music, which I play often when I'm almost constantly, when I'm working, when I'm doing other things, when I'm walking, when I'm whatever, there's something still, an element, you cannot get away from the necessity to sing. Whether you have a good voice or not, it's irrelevant. There's something that happens to us when we sing. It was another key in finding this gateway. In verse 5, this jumped out to me. The psalmist says, out of my deep anguish and pain, I prayed. And God, you helped me as a father. You came to my rescue and broke open the way into a beautiful and broad place. Awesome verse. But the action is to pray out of anguish and pain. And when I'm talking to somebody that's in anguish and pain, it's hard to tell them to do that, because it's those things, those good things you tell someone to do to help them get out of that place, and they're like, honestly, you're going to tell me to do that? Like, that's, you know, it's sometimes even hard to say. This is the key, though. But if you're in, when we're in anguish and pain, there is truly an opportunity there. A prayer out of that is a unique prayer. It's a prayer that gets to heaven. Can we pray in our anguish and pain and use it as a launching pad? Out of that place comes a cry that doesn't come when you're not in pain, when you're okay, when you're good. There's a unique cry that comes out of our pain. Our infants have this wired in them that when they feel pain or hunger, which can be painful, they cry like it's painful. They let us know, I'm hungry. They don't have the ability to articulate the words, I'm hungry. And so they cry. That cry activates us. Almost any adult that hears a baby cry becomes uncomfortable, and there's this necessity. It's funny how that's in us. Somebody fix that. We got to fix that. A baby's crying. Someone needs to do something to stop that. It's a cry. We're wired, actually, to respond to it. How much more are fathers wired to respond to our genuine cries when they come out of pain? I just thought, wow, it's really important for me, even as a pastor, to see this and to remember this, and that prayer out of that place, for everybody, it reaches God's ears. It gets his attention. It's a necessity. It brings us to that place of the gateway to enter in to his presence, enter into that amazing place. In verse 6, I highlighted this. This is deep. Trust in the Lord. Again, something we've gotten so used to saying that it doesn't seem like an answer. And yet there's an activity of bringing the things that we're truly worried about and entrust it to the Lord. Because we do our planning, we look for ways out, we're on our phones looking for answers, and there are just so many, there are these things that there just isn't an answer. You just have to trust the Lord with the situation. And that's not a bad thing. We avoid it like the plague. We hate the uncomfortableness of it. And yet there's something in that place. When you do that, you open up. It's part of the gateway of opening that gate that you can enter in. Practice trusting in the Lord. Stop being upset that you can't figure it out and understand, oh, this is just one of those places and times in my life where I have to trust. And that's not a bad thing. That keeps me dependent on the Lord. And it makes me profess that I believe he's in control and that he can work it out, that he can make things change. In verse 10 was the next thing that jumped out to me that was an action. Once I was hemmed in and surrounded by those who don't love you, but by Yahweh's supernatural power, I overcame them all. Wow. Again, this is a hard thing to say to someone that is in the battle, overwhelmed, but it still remains. It shows up again in Revelations. There's a necessity for us to overcome. You don't get out of this. Everybody has to overcome. And so the first part of this is to realize it's part of life. I referred last week to this the picture of our football games that we watch, and there's the offense and the defense, and how ridiculous the game would be if the defense didn't show up, that you were the offense, but the defensive line didn't show up at all on the field. We almost would probably go to sleep and go, not move the ball anywhere. And I think sometimes the enemy provides a place for us where we almost stop playing, we stop going forward because the opposition is removed. Then the opposition shows up and we're confused by it, like, God, why this attack? Why this dream? Why this fear? Why this thing that's coming? And we wonder what's wrong with us or what we did wrong or why isn't the Lord protecting us from certain things? But when you realize life is in opposition, the Christian life or walking in faith is opposed. It's normal for it to be opposed. As a matter of fact, when we have opposition to what we're trying to move forward, and we're really frustrated when we're trying to do good things, and it gets thwarted, it gets interfered with, we get robbed from, we get stolen from, we're like, what's wrong? What's missing? And the answer is nothing. You're in the game. No football player joining the team would be, he'd get thrown out if he went to his coach and said, "Coach, what's up? What's going on? Those guys are hitting me. They're tackling me." We would laugh at that. But we do act ridiculously sometimes as believers. Things are hard, and we don't think it should be. We have this mentality like, if I'm doing what's right, there shouldn't be opposition to it. That's completely wrong. We have an enemy. We have an opposition. And we must overcome. What was interesting, by verse 13, they pushed me right up to the edge, and I was ready to fall, but you helped me to triumph, and together we overcame them all. So here is this thing. If we will choose to overcome, the Lord does come alongside and helps us overcome. So you're never left alone in it, but we do have to make a choice. We'll watch people, and you can only do so much to help somebody. At some point, they have to take this up and say and make a choice to press in, to press and overcome. And it's at that time, in that season, then the Lord, the psalmist, experienced this, that we overcame them all. So he realized he didn't do it in his own strength, but he chose to. And then he got the help from the Lord that was so important. In verse 15, the joyful songs I now sing will be sung again in the hearts and homes of all your lovers. So singing, not just songs, but joyful songs. And again, as we've watched in our church history and the worship songs we choose, there are seasons where we've been pretty heavy. We have been more in mourning than we have any victory or joy. And we cannot escape the fact that the joyful song still has a place, no matter what. It still has to show up. And it's sometimes a challenge because the overwhelming feeling is we're mourning, we're grieving, we're struggling. And to sing a joyful song in that seems so contrary, so contradictory. And yet it is part of the keys to this finding this gateway to the presence of God, singing for joy in the midst of the opposition, singing for joy. It's a choice. It's a choice. Verse 15. It continues on. My loud shouts of victory will echo throughout the land, for Yahweh's right hand conquers valiantly. Phyllis is such a champion to get us to shout. When she calls us to that as a church, and it happens in the house all the time. She just was on the phone with someone this morning, and they gave her a good report. I was like, let's celebrate. That was an awesome breakthrough. And she wasn't, whoever was on the other end, she wasn't satisfied with the response. She goes, no, come on, let's shout. She starts clapping and shouting, and I assume the person on the other side of the phone was, let's celebrate. Let's act like this is a big deal, because it is a big deal. And how guilty we are. We're almost like we're too something to break out and to have this full expression. So it is one of the, it's one of the things the enemy subtly works on us to get us to not have appropriate responses. Everything's reserved. Everything has to do with how we look, how we appear. That reminds me of something. Let me look back at my notes here to see if I want to make sure. I did miss something. I was thinking of this. Back to verse 6, because this is so significant. Now I know, Lord, that you are for me, and I will never fear what man can do for me. So this element of being free from the fear of man is another key thing. And I wrote on my notes, fear of man is the open door to be manipulated. Nobody likes to be manipulated. And actually, nobody can manipulate us unless this is in place. If we have the fear of man, we will fall into all kinds of traps of being, end up doing something we don't really want to do, agreeing with something we don't really agree with. We will be manipulated or controlled, which we all hate. But the root of that is to have the fear of man. And the fear of man, fear of anything, I realize how much, if we still have the feeling, we stop moving forward and we won't press through, like, I have fear, I can't move forward. And we have to find this reality that just because you have feelings of fear, you cannot, it's when we allow that feeling to stop us from going forward. Often when we start, if we have fear, we just need to push through the feeling, because it dissipates once you overcome, which it's connected to overcoming, of course. So that was just interesting. And this, the fear of man, It's such a stronghold, and it's so strong in our culture. We're so conscious, so self-conscious of what people think and how people will feel if I do something, if I say something, if I believe something. And we really need to be free from that. And we can do that with a heart of compassion, that we don't mean to offend, but we have convictions. We believe what we believe. There's a good positive way to be there and go there and walk that out. If we don't, we will be miserable. Then we start blaming people. It's actually not their fault. We choose to not be something. In verse 19, there's this phrase about passing through. You swing wide, you gates of righteousness, and let me pass through. And I just know that there is a passing, like an entering in to righteousness, where we really embrace this right place of actions, of being. And the next phrase, it's the next two. The next one is actually we cry, we bless you, Lord, and there's a cry that comes out of our lives that we need to have this. It's like sometimes in worship, have you ever felt challenged that there's got to be more words than praise you, Lord, and a couple things that we say? And there's this whole array of things that we need more language sometimes, I think. I often desire that. And blessing the Lord is an amazing thing. Like just releasing that cry, We bless you, Lord. It's perhaps more significant than we think. In verses 27 through 28, again, I was tweaked by, we've gotten away from this. I remember my early days of being a believer. There was a real emphasis on, and here's the verse, for the Lord our God has brought us his glory light. I offer him my life in joyous sacrifice. And when I began, there was such a clear back to my early days of being a believer, there was this real awareness of giving my life to the Lord. And I've lost some of that language, and I don't hear it a lot. And I came back to this. I'm like, this is something, and we need to renew it all the time. Lord, my life belongs to you. That is what lordship is. It changes everything. Like, I'm not my own. I've been bought with a price. Every time you come back to that, a lot of things kind of get settled. It brings a peace. It's about who you belong to and who you choose to belong to, and our ability to step away from it is always there. Like, don't you wish you just could do it once and for all and you never have to struggle with that again? But things come up. Pretty soon you'll find yourself living independent again of the Lord, choosing your own way, acting, talking like you own your life. You're in control. You're in charge. And the next phrase that stuck out to me goes along with it in verses 27 and 28 as well. There's the phrase, tied tightly to your altar, I will bring you praise, for you are the God of my life, and I will lift you, exalting you to the highest place. So this picture of being tied to the altar, if only, it's the problem with a living sacrifice. It can easily get back up and walk away. And being alive and never losing our ability to choose, there are times we start, it's gradual, it's deceptive, we start picking up our life again, the ownership of our life again. We take ourselves off of that altar of belonging to the Lord, of that place of sacrifice that's not to people, but it is to the Lord, a genuine offering up our life. Romans 12. This admonition to come and consecrate ourselves and be a living sacrifice. It needs renewed continually, and it's part of the release. It actually brings freedom to us. I belong to you, Lord. It's part of your worship. In worship, there's all this, a lot of this is interaction. Like, it gives us more language in worship too. These are the elements to keep bringing around and offering up to, and all of these things. Every cry, every we bless you, Lord, every shout of victory, every looking to him, every choice to stay on the altar. And I saw this phrase and I thought of all the things that we're hard-pressed about something. And the biggest frustration is that you're tied to something. You're tied to the covenant. You're tied to a covenant relationship. You're tied to a commitment that you made. And all of a sudden, you're in a situation that you committed yourself to, and it's hard to stay. It's hard to walk it out. It's hard to keep your promise. And it all lends to this thing. There's such a tension. On one hand, we're free to choose. On the other hand, we're tied to things. Paul referred to being a bondservant. Like, I'm tied to this thing. I'm not legally, I could walk away from the gospel, but I couldn't, but I can't because I'm tied to it. And no matter how hard it gets, I can threaten to quit. I can threaten to leave. Like, we always keep that in our back pocket. I'm leaving. But when you are really tied to relationships and commitments and know that you're in God's will, even when those moments come that you just hate it, there's this sense of being tied and committed that there's not, it's not physical. It's relational. It's like, I know if I walk away from this, I'm in trouble. And I experienced that even as a young man. Before I got married, I was in such turmoil, still living on my father's farm, working for him, and the the moments of conflict, and I remember at one moment, I was so upset, I was ready to leave the farm and leave living with them and go off on my own. I had this huge warning from the Lord, even in my anger, like, don't do that. Like, I felt it from heaven. It was so strong because my feelings were so strong too. And I had a real big altercation with my father, which normally we got along, but it was really intense. And I was ready to just pack up and go. I didn't know where I was going or what I was going to do. And I just felt like the hand of the Lord. I don't know how else to describe it, invisible, but it was like you're not going anywhere. Don't go anywhere. And there wasn't logic to it. Other people my age were independent. I was in my early 20s. Like, it was ridiculous that I wouldn't be allowed to leave, but the Lord made me stay there. I did stay. I stayed and worked that out, walked that out until I got married and moved on with my life. But it's so important. It's that thing of being tied to things, and we've got to walk that out righteously. And there's not a rule book for this. There's not a handbook. We all have our things. There's just, it's bigger than life. This is where I'm supposed to be. I've got to stay here. I've got to stay in this. I've got to walk this out. And wow, when we do that for the Lord's sake, when we do that out of true integrity of our walk, what comes of that? Like, it opens the door for the blessings, for the provision, for all these things to work together for good. Verse 28, another admonition, I lift you high and exalt you to the highest place. Can we ever worship too much? Can we ever put ourselves in the position of worshiping when you don't know what else to do? Every time we worship, and sometimes from the most difficult places in our life, when we keep offering up this worship to Him, we're fulfilling something so, so valuable, so important. And I believe every one of our expressions of worship and where we worship, how we worship, it all, the Lord considers all of it. It's all important, and it all has a place. And the last thing that I saw in this chapter, in verse 29, and it reads this, so let's keep on giving our thanks to God, for He is so good. His constant, tender love lasts forever. So it began with giving thanks, and the chapter amazingly ends with the same simple thing. Give thanks. Give thanks. I love people. I love people being around people that are thankful, that find things to be thankful for. You can always be upset about something, but when you get around people that just have this gratefulness for what they have, it gets on you. We literally can change atmospheres just with our thanksgiving. And when need reminded, because it's hard to walk in when you're bombarded with conflict and frustration and need, it's hard to be thankful. Like I said, the need becomes so big, but if we can give thanks and embrace what we have, the provision we have, and the grace, it changes our heart, our attitude. It also opens up the doors for everything we actually do need. The psalmist again in verse 20, I have found the gateway to God. And these are the things that we know. They're the things that we know. We just constantly need to be reminded, to be brought back to this place, and to realize God is at work in us, to will and to work His perfect will. And it's never over till He says it's over. We never know what there is to accomplish. We just have to trust the Lord and shine and grow in the place that the Lord has called us to. So let's pray. Does anybody else have anything else to share or add to that? Father, today I just ask, especially for all the people listening to this podcast and our people, that You continue to grow us and use us and give us rest in this season. protect us. We have all of this promise, Psalms 91. You'll protect us from the plague. That if we will just abide in the shadow of the Almighty, under the covering, if we'll abide there, you will keep us. We trust in you. Father, thank you for the testimonies of people that are delivered from this sickness, from this virus, the people that overcome it. Even in the midst of many that do not overcome it, there still are testimonies of those that do overcome it. And Father, we just entrust to you all that's involved with this. We entrust to you our finances. We entrust to you the days to come. And we choose, like the psalmist said, to overcome the obstacles, to have that if we will embrace the things that we have to overcome, that you will come alongside of us and our testimony will sound like the psalmist, together we overcame, you and I, Lord. So Father, make our people strong, release gifts and callings. I ask that all of us will have opportunity to change the atmosphere, to break the power of fear, to press through the feelings as we make declarations that we trust in you, that you are our God, and that you have ultimately, you have everything in your hands. And we just thank you for that so much. In Jesus' name.